You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, November 17th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our producer for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Suzanne Potter, Antonia Gonzalez, Zamone Perez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Terrence Burns. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Multiple cities in Oregon have suspended the use of automatic license plate readers for fear their data is being exploited by ICE. That made for an interesting informational session Monday morning at the Oregon Senate Judiciary Committee. Just last week, the city of Woodburn announced it will turn off its Flock surveillance cameras over concerns that the footage could be helping out for ICE raids. Community members and advocacy groups pushed the city to turn off those cameras, which it decided to do for at least 6 months. The city of Eugene moved to turn off their Flock cameras too. Flock cameras are AI-powered surveillance cameras that read license plates. It's a private company, and the cameras are connected to a nationwide data network. Publicly available information doesn't yet indicate that ICE used Flock data from Woodburn, but a recent study at the University of Washington found that, despite sanctuary laws, at least 8 cities shared their Flock data with Customs and Border Patrol. Border Patrol had backdoor access to 10 other cities' Flock data, too. ICE operations in Washington and Oregon are conducted by the same field office in Seattle. Local law enforcement in Oregon is not allowed to share information or aid immigration enforcement unless there's a judge's warrant that requires it. Advocates are calling on other Oregon cities and counties to end their contracts with Flock. The Oregon for All Coalition says that Lane, Jackson, and Douglas counties all use this service, as do Roseburg, Medford, and the Washington County District Attorney. That's part of the backdrop leading up to this informational session that happened Monday morning at the Oregon Senate Judiciary Committee. Here's an excerpt of that committee, starting with the committee chair, Senator Floyd Przanski.
We're going to open up our next of our informational hearings. This will be automatic license plate readers. This will be an area that I expect that we will see legislation for 2026. So, Kevin, I'll let you and the chief start off.
Great. Thank you. Chair Przanski, Vice Chair Thatcher, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police. And I have the privilege of representing both the Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association here in the Oregon legislative process. And it's my pleasure to introduce the subject of automatic license plate readers, commonly called ALPR, and to discuss how local law enforcement agencies in Oregon are utilizing the technology. I'll then turn it over to Chief Chris Skinner, who will talk more specifically about their specific program in Eugene. ALPR is not new. It's been used for decades in Oregon, in states around the United States, and frankly around the globe to help interdict criminal activity and to help generate leads and close cases. In Oregon, ALPR is deployed in two main primary ways. The first is fixed cameras. mounted on infrastructure such as traffic signals, bridges, and light poles. And then the second is mobile cameras installed on patrol vehicles. The Oregon State Police, for instance, just deployed ALPR in all of their patrol vehicles around the state. Let me talk briefly about what ALPR captures. ALPR record is created when a camera detects and reads a license plate, generating a concise set of information. Each record includes a cropped image of the plate, the date and time of the detection, the GPS location or fixed camera site where it occurred, and the translated plate number and issuing state. It may also include a limited scene image showing just enough of the vehicle, such as bumper, light, general color, to confirm the accuracy of the read. ALPR cameras capture only what an officer could observe in public view, and the technology is intentionally designed to limit information to plate recognition. ALPR systems are used, the data is used in two different ways. The first is what I'll call real-time alerts, often called a hit list. The hit list is a narrow, purpose-built set of license plate tied to specific public safety alerts. When a camera scans a plate, it automatically checks it against federal NCIC databases and Oregon LEDS database, and only notifies law enforcement if there is a match to the list of crimes that it's supposed to be looking for. So typical hit list categories include stolen vehicles, felony or violent crime suspects, Amber Alerts, missing or endangered persons, and vehicles linked to active investigations. The system does not track vehicles. It simply compares each scan to the list and provides an alert if appropriate. For investigations, historical ALPR detections help confirm or refute leads, identify patterns, place vehicles at key locations, and pinpoint potential addresses or travel habits. This information strengthens cases and speeds investigations, and data not only tied to an active case is subject to strict retention limits, typically 30 days. Importantly, ALPR data is only queried when directly relevant to an active investigation or to locating a suspect or a vulnerable person. It's also important to know what ALPR does not do. Unlike surveillance tools to track people continuously, ALPR does not monitor continuous movements. It's more like following breadcrumbs. It doesn't reveal private associations or record private conversations. Technologies such as GPS tracking or cell site data, they do generate detailed records of a person's movements and require warrants for that reason. In contrast, ALPR produces isolated data points, a vehicle on a public road at a single moment in time. It reads state-issued license plates that are publicly displayed in plain sight, where there is no expectation of privacy. It does not record conversations, as I mentioned, identify who is driving, determine passengers, or track a person's continuous movement. It simply performs more efficiently the same function an officer can perform manually. I'd like to give you just a couple quick case examples, and I could give you, I could spend all day giving you examples of how ALPR has been instrumental in cases. A few quick ones. After two violent assaults at a Salem massage business in July 2024, witnesses could provide only a general vehicle description. Using ALPR technology, investigators matched that description to a specific van and obtained the plate. An ALPR camera detected the vehicle near Lancaster and Sunnyview, allowing officers to locate and arrest the suspect within an hour. DNA collected after the arrest linked him to another sexual assault involving a woman with developmental delays. He later pled no contest to multiple counts of rape, sodomy, attempted rape, and kidnapping. Without the ALPR, he likely would have continued targeting vulnerable victims. Also in July, a woman was found shot to death in her vehicle. Nearby video showed only a vague image of a Nissan Rogue with an unreadable plate. A Salem ALPR camera captured the same vehicle shortly afterwards and provided the crucial plate number. That single ALPR hit enabled investigators to identify, locate, and ultimately convict the out-of-state suspect, someone with no clear connection to the victim. Without ALPR data, the case would have been extremely difficult to solve.
Kevin,
and then my final one.
Okay, I was on the time check, and you got about 5 minutes for your side of the presentation.
Yep.
So we can make certain we hear everyone else.
Okay, I'm sorry. On February 14th of 23, ALPR and Clackamas County Sheriff's Office patrol vehicle alerted deputies to a Lincoln Town car that was reported stolen by the Rainier Police Department. The victim of the stolen car was an elderly woman who was carjacked. Deputies quickly located the vehicle, and when they attempted to stop it in Wilsonville, occupants fled before being intercepted moments later. I'm going to shorten this, but you can get the point. They were able to interdict somebody that would have likely continued a violent crime spree. So ALPR has been incredibly important to our agencies. And just finally then, our Oregon law enforcement's committed to ensuring that the ALPR use and access remains responsible, ethical, and privacy protected. Agencies have been actively involved in establishing strong procurement and contract standards, creating data retention and deletion protocols, supporting audits and access controls, and prohibiting unauthorized data sharing, restricting national aggregation of Oregon data, and ensuring that only personnel with a legitimate public safety purpose have access to the ALPR information. I'm going to leave it there. Public trust is incredibly important to Oregon law enforcement, so we understand sensibilities or sensitivities about access to ALPR data, and we're taking action statewide with our law enforcement agencies to make sure we're addressing that. And with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Chief Skinner.
Okay. Chief, when you're ready.
Thank you for your time and good afternoon, Chair Przanski and Vice Chair Thatcher. For the record, my name is Chris Skinner. I'm the Chief of Police here in the City of Eugene. Kevin did a fantastic job of outlining the ALPR technology and how it has shown up in our communities, making our communities safer. I will just add to that that I think one of the challenges that we have moving forward is that many of the discussions are starting to conflate the issue of ALPR with a specific vendor. And I think we need to separate those out because the technology as an industry standard practice is a crime fighting tool that all of us need in the state of Oregon. And we've seen it certainly affect our livability and our safety here in the city of Eugene. We had our program for just a few short months before we suspended it as at the request of our city council, pending some further discussions and maybe a more enhanced contract with our specific vendor. In that short period of time, we saw as many as 94 incidents where we were able to make arrests. 63 or 4 of those were felony arrests here in Eugene. Many of those cases in the early stages were homicide suspects that were captured on behalf of the sheriff's office, and as well as sexual assault suspects and domestic violence suspects caught. Upwards of 70% of all of our criminal activity has a vehicle description attached. And so this type of technology is really important as a crime fighting tool. Probably the most profound example of what happened here in Eugene is our Asian American community members were subject of a burglary ring and very organized, well-financed burglary ring over the last couple of years. We saw as many as 24 different burglaries that were targeting our Asian American community members. We made some arrests back in 2024, only to find that we had a new group in town that were targeting our Asian Americans. And if but for ALPR with a very grainy photo of a vehicle, would have not been able to identify that vehicle and subsequent license plate that would, with the help of the Eugene Police Department Patrol Division, Street Crimes, and our detective unit, vector in and find the location of the vehicle staying at a local Airbnb as their base of operations. We were able to surveil that particular vehicle, watch them drive through our Oregon communities up and down the I-5 corridor, such as Albany, Corvallis, and up to Salem, where they committed another burglary of another Asian American family up there. We followed them back and were able to ascertain that they had brought some of the stolen material back with them to Eugene. We wrote the appropriate search warrants, and we were able to arrest 7 individuals and actually break open this organized ring that were targeting our Asian American community members. None of that would have happened if we would have not had ALPR at the right place at the right moment. And with that very grainy photo of a vehicle description, we were able to ascertain the license plate, which was key in us being able to put that investigation together and will be key as we prosecute these cases moving forward. We have full support of our district attorney, Chris Perosa, down here, as ALPR is seen as a very vital tool for prosecution. And we're hopeful that we're able to move forward as we look to the short session in 2026 and beyond, move forward with having just and reliable controls around ALPR, but having that technology here for Oregon communities and Oregon law enforcement as a critical crime-fighting tool. Thank you.
If you're just tuning in, this is KABU News In Depth. We're listening into an informational hearing that happened at the Oregon Senate Judiciary Committee earlier today on the use of automatic license plate readers.
We're going to shift into the presentation from Kai Farside as well as Rob Sheldon. I'm going to let you all take the lead. I'm going to also say that you're going to get an extra couple of more minutes to do your presentation before we go to Q&A.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, Vice Chair Thatcher, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kai Farside.
My name is Rob Sheldon.
For those that aren't familiar, we'll first do a brief overview of how the system works before we speak on what we were invited here. FLOC is, most of all, a highly networked surveillance system installed across the U.S. They are growing rapidly and are up to about 100,000 devices. This number is an estimate based on data compiled from many sources because it's difficult to get complete information on installations. In Oregon, most of these are installed along the I-5 corridor and urban areas, as this map shows, but there are FLOC installations in many smaller towns, too. Each camera uploads data directly to FLOC's infrastructure, hosted on Amazon Web Services, AWS. Law enforcement get a web-based user interface that allows them to request some of that data. This architecture allows FLOC to provide access directly to third parties at any time without the knowledge or consent of the law enforcement customers. This is a typical example of the kind of search results that a police agency might get from FLOC. These show the rear corner views of vehicles. However, FLOC's cameras collect far more than just license plates. This is some of the source code that we have extracted from one of the devices. It very clearly shows the different categories of objects that the cameras are programmed to recognize and upload, including people and bicycles. FLOC themselves proudly advertise the ability to search for things that are not vehicles, including people, using descriptions of their clothing. And police departments have access to some of these other non-vehicle images as well. This is what the search result for bicycle looked like. Law enforcement agencies have the ability to share this information with third parties. There is extensive data sharing built into FLOC, but we would need a lot more time to talk about that than we have today. The vast amount of data collected, combined with a powerful search interface and a lot of built-in data sharing, create a lot of opportunities for abuse. For this presentation, we will focus on one particular type of abuse, which is FLOC sharing data with third parties without the knowledge or consent of the law enforcement customers. It is extremely difficult to get information on abuses of FLOC. The only oversight built into the system is the search reason field in the search interface. Users are supposed to enter some text here to get results. However, they are not required to enter a specific or true reason, and nobody is enforcing adherence to policies here. Journalists have used public records requests to examine this data for abuses. The search reason provided is most often something vague like investigation. Sometimes there's enough metadata available to uncover cases of abuse. The groundwork for FLOC's cooperation with federal agencies was laid early in their development. They had MOUs with fusion centers by October of 2020. In June of this year, in response to investigations of search audit logs, FLOC said they removed direct access to FLOC data for federal agencies. However, in August, investigators found additional evidence in search audit data that federal agencies had another kind of direct access to FLOC systems at individual cities. FLOC set up accounts for Customs and Border Protection agents who were able to request direct access to the FLOC systems in individual cities. Because FLOC's interface incentivizes data sharing, many cities accepted the requests without knowing who they were sharing data with. Again, these agencies were not aware of this data sharing. FLOC described this as a pilot program and subsequently discontinued it in August in response to national reporting. FLOC framed this as a local issue, but they created a system that allowed federal agencies to breach local contracts without the knowledge of the cities or departments that had paid for the system. In October of this year, investigations by Ron Wyden's office uncovered a greater level of federal access to FLOC than was previously known. This was enabled through a different mechanism than the cases over the summer. The mechanism is the National Lookup Tool, which allows police agencies to search FLOC systems across the country. Agencies have to provide national access in order to gain national access. FLOC then gave federal agents direct access to this same feature. We have to emphasize here that we are looking at only one of FLOC's issues, and we're doing it through the tiniest of keyholes in too short a time for detailed discussion. The University of Washington recently published a comprehensive report on FLOC's repeated data sharing with federal agencies, which you can access here and is in your materials. Their findings matched those of journalists, Ron Wyden's office, and independent organizations like ours. Thank you for spending a few minutes with us on this.
All right, thank you. Bob, did you have some comments that you're also going to be making?
Chair Przanski, no, we're ready for questions.
Okay. So first of all, let me just start and make sure the committee knows that the plan here was to get information out, kind of just a starting point. I'm calling it the springboard for a work group. There will be a work group that will be assimilating after the legislative days to actually work through some of the issues that have been brought up today and other issues that have not had time. So we can, in fact, look forward to what legislation should come forward in 2026. I will start with, I do understand that there are some concerns that I think both parties of interest here as to making certain that there is not a misuse of this information data source. I understand that in the state of Washington, there's been a recent decision determining that this type of information is being deemed a public record. And I think this is one of the areas that, since we are wanting to safeguard individuals' public privacy and safety, that we need to be looking at potentially some type of exclusion from our public records law, even though Charlie Fisher told us that we should not. So Charlie, if you're not with us still, hopefully you'll get that mark and we'll see you when we are doing the work group. All right, I'm going to open up for some questions. We have about a little less than 10 minutes. If there are questions now, and if not, realize we will be working this issue and we will be bringing it back up probably in January for some additional talk. Senator Broadman first.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, and this is probably for Kevin or maybe for Chief. In my mind, we have existing law related to the Sanctuary Promise laws that protect against, I'm not sure I've heard any evidence that this has happened, but to the extent a inquiry were made to the system that we're talking about from ICE, would the Eugene Police Department know about it?
Chair Przanski, Co-Chair Thatcher, and Senator Broadman, I'm going to let Chief Skinner actually respond to that. So I'll also note, just for the record here, that FLOC is one of several vendors, sure, in this area, so they are a little bit unique in terms of this focus, but Eugene does currently utilize FLOC, so I'm going to turn it over to Chief Skinner to see if he wants to take a shot at that.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin, and thank you for the question. Eugene Police Department does utilize Flock in this particular case. It was through our open public procurement process that they were granted the RFP. They are, as you can imagine, have the market share in our country and have that product. We own the data according to the contract. Now, we can have all sorts of conversations on whether or not we think Flock is honoring the contract or not. That's for a different conversation, but we own the data and we do absolutely know who has been looking at our data. Eugene is unique in the sense that we have civilian oversight here in the independent auditor's office, and we're standing up independent auditor provisions to be able to go in and look at who's looking at our data, as well as how we're using our data and making sure that we're using it in a just and reliable manner.
Follow up.
Yes, follow up.
So, I thank you, Chief. I appreciate that. I think what I'm focusing on is existing law, whether it's being complied with. It sounds like if you know somebody is supporting ICE activity, we have a problem under existing law. So whether it's a vendor or the department itself, I mean, obviously each police department is going to decide whether they're following Oregon state law, or they're going to have an opinion about whether they're following Oregon state law. But I would just observe that to the extent there is a tool being used to assist or support ICE activity, it doesn't appear to comply with Oregon state law.
Yeah, Chair Przewalski and Senator Broadman, I would agree with that. And I think our agencies, without exception, do not believe that this technology and the data should be accessed for those purposes.
Yeah, I would agree.
Any other questions, Senator Manning?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief comment. This became an issue real fast, all of a sudden. And the concern about data, who controls the data, who has access to the data, and as I understand, this is a private company. I do support law enforcement use an area available tool to track and capture wrongdoers. But it's also like a net to me that I'm hearing that's sweeping up everybody. An incident that occurred in a state where the chief of police was using, not here, not in Oregon, the chief of police was using the Flock system to track his former girlfriend and her husband. And he was following them a record number of times. I'm concerned about the potential abuse of that. Now, if the data proves out, and Mr. Chair, perhaps that'll come out in the work group, if the data proves out that the information stays local for a certain period of time, the same way we do with body-worn cams, and is owned by the department, and it is, after that certain data, there's no hit, it automatically washes out. That's something that I'm going to be interested in seeing, because privacy is a big concern, specifically now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let me just follow up with that. I mean, for me, as the work group goes through this, we will need to be looking at what are the penalties or potential sanctions for people who are misusing abuse. Clearly, in the outside of the automatic license plate reader area, if someone who is a certified officer, they could, in fact, lose their certification being an officer in the state. I do think that we definitely want to be looking at the sanctions that are available, and not only internally that can be done within the departments, but also what can be done on a more community level, upholding individuals, wrongdoers, no matter badge or no badge, yeah, doing the right thing or wrong thing.
That was an excerpt of a hearing at the Oregon Senate Judiciary Committee concerning automatic license plate readers. Some cities in Oregon have decided to turn theirs off for fear that the data is being exploited by ICE. At the end of the information session, it was indicated that this might be something that Oregon lawmakers will be taking up in the short session next year. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Althea Billing. Thank you.
tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Tune in this Monday at 11 p.m. as the bedtime radio show for grown-ups, Gremlin Time, presents By the Dawn's